Ag Bioscience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
The fruit of our labors have got us here. We think about the speed of change in agriculture and some of the major things that have happened. And some would say, actually, you know, in the past 100 years, agriculture changed somewhat slowly for a good while. And then here we are today, and the pace of change is somewhat radical.
Welcome to Ag Bioscience, the number one podcast in the world for innovation in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture. Here is your host, Agrinova CEO, Mitch Fraser.
Welcome back to Ag Bioscience. New data just reported from USDA shares that net cash farm income decreased roughly 3.5% from 23 into 24 when we look at adjusted inflation-adjusted numbers. But here's the piece that's a silver lining that I feel like is untold. That number, net cash farm income, is still above average when we look at the last 20 years from USDA data. Here to help us make sense of it, what it means to producers and what it means to the broader ag bioscience economy is Natasha Cox, Vice President for Farm Credit Mid-America. Natasha, it is a delight to have you with us.
Mitch, I'm so glad to be here today. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we're going to have so much fun, Natasha. So we're going to get to your time on the farm, what you're doing there. We got to talk economics first. We look at this. There's been so much reported, so much talked about of prices being roughly the same cost as production cost. In some cases, production cost being higher than market price on commodities. We look at this new USDA data, and the headline is a rough one, $5.7 billion. When you set aside the percentages, a $5.7 billion decrease from 23 to 24. But the silver lining here is this idea that, not idea, it's a reality, that we're still above net cash farm income, inflation adjusted, is still above where it's been historically over the last 20 years. Give us perspective. What's the health of the farm balance sheet? What's really happening on the farm here in the Midwest?
Mitch, it'd be easy to sit here today and say that everything's doom and gloom. And as I look at my role at Farm Credit Mid-America, and I look at my role actually on the farm here in Indiana as well, I can tell you the pressure's real. And the pressure's real because of the volatility and the uncomfortableness of the global economy that we sit in today when we think about regulation and export markets, potentially tariffs. And so I think the uncertainty is fueling more of the fear than the facts. And you're right, Mitch. When you look at, let's just slip back to 2017 and look at net farm cash income or net cash.
I know, I always get net cash farm income.
Yeah.
USDA always reports it the other way, I feel
let's
like.
Let's look at the bottom line, Mitch.
Amen. Right? Like,
let's just say bottom line. Let's talk bottom line here. And at the end of the day, look back to 2017, and there was a steep increase up to 2022. Then we look at 2022, and you think, what made up net cash farm income in the United States? There was also a lot of ad hoc payments that were continuing to flow into the farmers' income statements and balance sheets. Then we start a fairly steep decline as we look at 22 to 24. In 25, we see a flattening projection in that. But at the end of the day, those numbers are still well above average. Okay, but what we are handling is a lot more dollars than what we've handled when you look at gross commodity costs or gross commodity income and net cost for expenses. And that's where the uncertainty comes. We're laying out a lot more cash outlay to do the same thing, or maybe a little bit more than what we have done historically. Farmers came into this and agribusinesses with really strong balance sheets, though, very well positioned when you think of liquidity ratios. Do I think that debt to asset ratios are going to continue to decline? Absolutely. That all depends on what happens in the equipment sector, what happens with land valuations as well, and other pressures that we're going to see on the American farmer.
When you look at inflation adjusted, I think there's so much conversation that's happened. Some of it, candidly, I think is political positioning. Some of it, I think, is headline grabbing, but some of it's reality. Well, we've seen a lot of inflation in this area. We've also seen a lot of innovation. You look at the meteoric rise of biologicals. You mentioned equipment and what's happened in the equipment industry. It's just a lot of advancements that have happening. As you look, you're sitting with farmers, you're looking at farm financials, you're working with agribusinesses. What are some of those big trends? What are the big trends that you're looking at on a financial health standpoint of farms, of agribusinesses heading into 2025?
First and foremost, being ready and open for business and being able to pivot and be flexible. So when you think about innovation in the ag space and gene editing, genomics, where we're at in ag biosciences space as a whole, are you open for business on your farm? And are you well positioned to do that? Not just financially, but with the technology that you have available and those that are surrounding you in partnership. And so really being able to pivot into new spaces is important for the agribusinesses that we serve and the farmers that we serve as well. And so you're relying heavily on, I don't want to say antiquated business models, but business models that what you got you here won't get you there. And I think that that's something that we have to be very mindful of the fruit of our labors have got us here. We think about the speed of change in agriculture and some of the major things that have happened. And some would say, actually, you know, in the past 100 years, agriculture changed somewhat slowly for a good while. And then here we are today, and the pace of change is somewhat radical. Almost. And there's confusion, especially at the farm gate of what new technologies do I adapt to? What new markets do I explore? What startups do I partner with? And what changes do I invest in with my capital that could potentially be underseas to help me get to where I want to be, which is ever changing, the finish line is.
As you look at that, that complex calculus, and I want to get into how you're thinking about it on your farm, but I want to stay here broad initially because I think it's important. The other component, I think, that's adding complexity, particularly for ag bioscience innovators that are working with producers, and I think the inverse is true, producers working with ag bioscience innovators, is consolidation. We've seen consolidation on farm. Aimpoint, the directions group, has some really interesting work on this farm consolidation that we're seeing, but we see it on the supply chain side that's serving those acres as well. You've seen massive consolidation in plant science companies, specifically crop protection companies. We're starting to see it, and we saw it a little bit last year in the equipment industry with Trimble and AGCO. How does consolidation factor in as you think about all the things that are the puts and calls into the economic system of agriculture here in the States? How does consolidation play in?
At the end of the day, do we have fewer people in 2050 or fewer businesses creating the same output or more output than what we need to feed a growing population? And with that comes opportunity for specialization, operational efficiency, as well scalability. At the end of the day, I'll put on my farm credit hat and say our job is mission related, and that is to serve every farmer, large and small, and agribusinesses across the board. And the Aimpoint data and USDA data would say that the definition of a farm is still relatively small when we look at a family farm in the definition of the U.S. I also look at things that come into this component, foreign land ownership, what we're doing, land in transition in the states that we're in. But at the end of the day, specialization and devotion of duties, vertical integration could allow more innovation to what we do. However, there's risk that comes along with that. Risk, some would say, putting all your eggs in one basket, right, is something that is a common nomenclature. But at the end of the day, we're all looking for efficiency and innovation. And there's some tremendous partnerships that you just referenced that are going on in the ag space. They're going to change the way we live, consumers live. But let's just be honest, consumer demand drives this.
Oh, absolutely.
As farmers, producers, and agribusinesses, we have to be willing and able to adjust to the global changing consumer demands that we have. And there's some things that are going on in this world that are going to change the way agribusinesses go to market and what I grow on my farm. And that goes back to gene editing and genomics. And, you know, you think about what's going on in the GLP-1 space and different things that we're going to need to be able to do and how we're going to need to be able to pivot on what we're growing on our farm to meet consumer demands.
One of the greatest challenges, you know, we've talked a lot about food as health. You mentioned GLP-1. To me, it's a huge opportunity for agriculture, for ag bioscience. The challenge is there's so much room in terms of people and process and systems between a production acre and a consumer. Processors and CPG companies or medical companies, in the case of GLP-1s, as you look at all of the things, right? You look at this complex labyrinth of, I'm going to grow something on my farm. You have thousands of customers that you're working with every day that are thinking about this. But this calculus of how do I actually make a connection to that end market? In many cases, it's a commodity and it's hard to get there. Are you seeing investments being made on farm or with an agribusiness to either shorten that chain, the input to output ratio, or maybe even to change what's being grown on an acre to get to a new market on the end.
The difference between where you're at the farm gate to the consumer that consumes your food or your product through either food, fuel, or fiber seems 1,000 miles away. When you're in that combine and you're harvesting that acre of corn, or you're harvesting that acre of soybeans or wheat, or you're raising that hog, or producing that milk. And at the end of the day, those consortiums that you can join that help you find innovation quicker is going to help you get to that finish line and where you need to be. And at the farm gate, I think we have to start thinking more like chief medical officers and chief technology officers that we have to be to run our farms today. And then also the logistics and the labor issues that we have on the farm. So if I'm in X county in Indiana and I want to grow this that might meet the need of a new biomedical company that's going in Indianapolis or even somewhere in the, logistically, how am I going to make that work? Preservation, identity. Can I afford to store that long enough? Are my soil types, have I invested in biomass and different things like that are going to help me get there or position me for success in the future while also looking at profitability? Because all these things are great in theory,
but we have to make money.
These are businesses that we're running, and we have to be able to make money. And that's where farmers are at the hands of high regulation or uncertainty with regulation. So voluntary practices are going to sustainable practice to help us get there. To open new markets are going to be important to us. But Mitch, there are lots of opportunities in this world for farmers to experiment. However, maybe it's time that we think about putting some skin in the game too and start looking for startup businesses or consortiums or innovation startups that are happening where we can be part of that. And there's a lot of good cohorts, and Indiana does that best. There's a lot of great companies, and I'm sitting here right now with somebody that does it better than anyone else. And we're very fortunate with what we've got going on in the state of Indiana for our farmers that farm over 16 million acres of farmland and could contribute significantly to the state GDP. But there's a lot going on, and where you spend those chips are a little confusing.
Well, let's dig into it. We'll do it right after this. Ag Bioscience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
From berries to dairies, from crop advisors to data analyzers, Indiana Farm Bureau is at the forefront of the top issues impacting Indiana agriculture. No matter your role in the ag industry, Indiana Farm Bureau membership means you'll always have a champion and an advisor. And because so much of your time is focused on your own enterprise, it's also good to know Indiana Farm Bureau is always working to fight for the future of agriculture. We come together to advocate for rural viability, the protection of property rights, competitive tax policies, and against burdensome regulations. Whether our members need a door opened, an impact in public policy, or an ally to strengthen their communities, Indiana Farm Bureau is there. We are the unified voice for all agriculture. To learn more about the benefits of Indiana Farm Bureau membership, go to infb.org.
Welcome back to Ag Bioscience, talking with Natasha Cox from Farm Credit Mid-America. Natasha, you are a farmer, and we've talked a lot about your role, your perspective as a lender. We have to spend time on the farm. I think the one of the greatest challenges that innovators have, plant science innovators, ag tech innovators, software, hardware, animal science innovators, animal health innovators, is the connection to customer. And you have done such an amazing job here painting this picture of, we got to take some bets. I love your perspective of, we got to figure out where we put the chips. As you think about the future and you look at all the things that you get a chance to see at Farm Credit and on your farm, how do you do it? There are so many places. You could dedicate acres and acres just to biologicals. How do you share with your customers? And then how do you share with your farm, here's a plan, here's how we're going to execute this?
Well, first you got to do a self-evaluation and take a deep look at where you're at and what position you're in. And if you're not in the position to experiment, then let's work on getting you there, right? And that means financially, mentally and the partnerships and also the opportunities and the areas that you're putting yourself in to toward success in the future. And then next, you have to think about proximity and geocentricity and access. There could be great opportunities on the East Coast and West Coast, but does that make sense for my farm here in the Midwest? Where's the flow of my commodity going? What are the markets that I'm serving? Is there diversification opportunities to do full integration on the farm? And you know, when we look back 50 years ago now, you could go into the state of Indiana and on every farm, you would be raising row crops and livestock. That's changed dramatically. The landscape has changed dramatically, and that comes down to specialization, right? And efficiency and what we're doing with that. But first, I'm going to step back and I'm going to say labor continues to be a huge issue on the farm. So what can I do for with automation and robots that actually add a profit on the farm? So you think Rogo Ag, well, it's a clear example of some opportunities to have. What can I do with things like IntelliAir? So, you know, we're looking at new innovations and that IoT space and how can I connect things on the farm? And first, rural electrification had to start, right?
That's exactly
many
right.
100 years ago. And then we had to have rural broadband. And really, Indiana has, I think, made headway thanks to the governor and our commitment to that. I can now be connected on my farm in West Central Indiana. You know, I don't fear that the sensors on the combine aren't going to work. The data isn't going to talk. So I really feel good about the clean data that I have on the farm. Now, what do I do with that information that I have and how do I put it to work for me? And so we're really focusing on labor and operational efficiencies and then making sure that we get our space. And that means our soil, our storage plan and our logistics plan in play so that if we want to pivot and grow new commodities, that we can be able to do that. And it might mean that we grow many more things than we've ever grown today on the same farm and create a different ecosystem than we've ever had before. And really, how do we do that with ourselves? And I think it starts by putting yourself in the right space and exposing yourself to things that could be possible. And we have been very devoted to raising your traditional row crops on many, many farms across the Midwest because there's a need for that.
Right.
Right?
And there's a market.
There's a market. Fuel, food, and fiber. There's a market for that. But as changing consumer demands happen, I want to be well positioned to adapt to that. And I want the producers that I serve to be able to do that. And that doesn't have to be radical. It doesn't have to be overnight, but it does include a plan for sustainability that works for you and your definition of sustainability. I'm not going to even attempt to define that. And each administration is going to have a different look on that when we think about that federally. But at the end of the day, what are the subtle things that we can do every day to position ourselves for success?
I love this talk around sustainability because I think it's so important. Economic sustainability as priority one, yep. Right? We have to make sure that we can generate net income to have the ability to have the opportunity to do it again. You mentioned technology almost as an input to the opportunity, not that it's the destination, right? And so as you look with your clients, even on your farm, they all come with a cost. And every entrepreneur, every ag tech guy, gal, innovator, that's like, I have this thing. You mentioned IntelliAir, you mentioned Rogo. How do you build the calculus, right? How do you say, okay, I'm going to take a bet on Tim and IntelliAir. I'm going to take a bet on the team at Rogo. How do you build that in a way where you're not jeopardizing the future? You're solving a problem and everybody, there's economics in it for everyone. How are you telling your clients and then how are you doing it on your farm?
Starts with understanding where you're at today and surrounding you with yourself with good partners. And I would say Farm Credit is one of those good partners that can help you do that. So understanding where you're at and really digging into the supplemental understanding, just like you were a chief financial officer for your own operation. And then decoupling the emotion from that and saying, what are my business opportunities that I can take? And being honest with yourself about your break-evens. And then what do you see the future of the landscape of the business that you're running in the area that you live? It's very hard to just pick a farm up and move it, Mitch. I would actually say, I'm not going to tell you it's not able to be done because there's a lot of farms. The definition of a farm is much different across the board, whether it's greenhouses or vegetable production and all across the board, livestock, you can name it. It's different, but it's very hard to move a farm, right? So when you're doing strategic planning and you're looking at, am I mobile? Well, most of us are going to say, no. Well, then are the products that I move, how well can they be moved? What's the infrastructure I'm surrounded with? What's the regulatory environment? What are the opportunity? What's the business climate? in the state or the area that I see the flow of my businesses that I can serve can do that. Once you do that, then do I have the capital that I need to make that happen? If not, where can I access that capital? Is it through traditional financing, angel investors, different things like that? And once you've answered those questions and you have a vision for where you want to go, then you go get it one bite at a time, right? One bite at a time. And I think sometimes we're really afraid to make changes for the fear. And sometimes we change just because somebody else tells us to change. And that's where the partners that you surround yourself with really, really matter. For us, it's about operational efficiency. And we do want things that are going to be profitable. Sometimes we know we have to do things because it's just a cost of doing business too. We don't have a choice. It's just like drinking water. I have to drink water every day to live. And there's some things that are going to cost money to just play in the game. I have to pay for gas in my car every day just to get to work, to earn a paycheck. And at the end of the day, what is that water? What is that gas that we need to breathe into our operations, our businesses? That, and we have to, I think at times we need justification in the form of what am I getting out of this? And I go there quickly too, because looking at economic numbers and financials, but at the end of the day, sometimes we are going to have to stay sustainable and relevant to our end users. And that means there's going to be a cost to do that. But for us, it's operational efficiency, IoT, because there's 8,000 people that live in the county that I live in. Labor is a big issue.
Significant challenge.
Significant challenge, Mitch. The population growth in Indiana, I think, from 24 to 25 was 0.6%. But that was not a declining population. So that's a good thing. Actually, most states in the United States had positive growth. I believe in the United States, for the first time and sometimes, most of the growth didn't come on the East Coast and the West Coast. It actually came segregated across the Mid-South and other areas. And so I think COVID changed some of that landscape. Changed it, changed how consumers want to be fed, what they want, and transparency in their food and their medicines. And I have to figure out how to play a role in that on my farm. If my kids want to come back to do that, or others that want to take over our business at some point, when we stop, they're going to have to figure that out too.
Absolutely. As you look at your client base, you look at the farm, this is like trying to pick your favorite kids. So it's a little bit of a challenge, but give me the one thing that you're just on fire about heading into 2025 growing season. What technology, what innovation that you're just on fire about this year?
When we look at the state of Indiana and traditionally in the Midwest, we think about commodity-based world, especially corn and soybeans, and we think about operational efficiency. So I'm really, really on fire. One, some fintech solutions that are out there. You know,
we could spend
all day talking about that, because operational efficiency comes from understanding the flow of money and goods and services within your business. And so, like, you know, your traditional handwritten balance sheet and P&L is awesome, but there are a lot of things and a lot of companies that are out there that can help you do things differently than you've ever done them today and run your business. And then I look at how the movement of grain and how we do that in storage and the innovation that's coming in and how we preserve and identify our grain. When we think about that in the future, when we can move that commodity in a different way and also be able to move between different versions of that commodity and indemnify that different than we've ever done in a more efficient way, that really changes things on the farm. And I could tell you, drones, IntelliAir, robots, I mean, all of that is great, but every farm isn't open to that today and maybe not be in the place to that, but we've got to be more open than that. And I don't know, Copilot has been really fun to play with on the farm too. I mean, start experimenting with those things. What that will never replace are the subject matter experts that you need to go for, the hardest, most complicated things that you need. But if you're on the farm, start experimenting with some of the AI and data models that are out there and intelligent document processing, those things. Start experimenting with that. You might be surprised with the operational efficiency that you gain from it.
Amazing tool. I mean, I'm still learning ChatGPT and Copilot. I don't know if I'll ever get fully there, but you know, like our kids are going to grow up. It's going to be like the web was when we were growing up, right? Like, oh, the internet's this big, scary thing. Now it's just how we live. I think AI is going to be the same for them. All right, I have one final question for you. So there's a book out, I love it. It's called Competing Against Luck. And this whole construct of jobs to be done. So innovation exists where there's a job to be done and somebody pulls it into their life. Author's the late Clayton Christensen, amazing book. So when you look at the job to be done, the number one job to be done that's not being done on the farm today, but you're like, gosh, if we could solve that, That's a giant unlock. What's the job to be done that's not being done that needs to be done?
I think the synergy of all of our data. So first, we've got clean data, but I don't believe that all of our systems are talking and speaking to each other well, APIing together. And I truly believe, and so it's not your traditional hands-on job, but I think that we've got to solve for that, those little connectors that need to happen so that all of these amazing startups and innovations and catalysts that are out there, that they can begin to find this space to come together. And then maybe we can apply some layers of AI and different things like that to help us make more informed decisions and also create a space for needs that we don't even know need to be met today for our consumers and for our children. Right? I want to do better for my children and grandchildren. I want to get to where they need to be before they do, even if I'm not here still. So they have a better life than any of us ever had. And I know that that seems noble in that. And at the end of the day, we got to make money while we do it. Farmers and innovators and producers and agribusinesses need to be able to survive. And we could talk about the doom and gloom that's out there, but there's a lot of opportunity that still exists for us here.
Opportunity for optimism. Natasha Cox, Regional Vice President for Farm Credit Mid-America. Just a delight to have you on Ag Bioscience.
Thanks, Mitch. Appreciate it.
And thank you for joining us on Ag Bioscience. You can always get the latest Ag Bioscience news and insights from discussions just like this by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget, while you're online, check us out, agrinovusindiana.com. On behalf of the entire Agrinovus team, I'm Mitch Frazier, saying thanks for joining us. We look forward to seeing you real soon.
Ag Bioscience is a podcast by Agrinovus Indiana, hosted by Mitch Frazier, produced by Kayla Chittister and Fabian Rodriguez, photography and design by Kaylee Kerr. If you liked today's episode, subscribe, rate, and review so we can bring you more conversations just like this. Get all episodes of Ag Bioscience at agrinovusindiana.com.